My name is Gracia Violeta Ross. I come from Bolivia. I am an anthropologist by training. I also studied a master course on gender, sexual and reproductive health in Peru. I work as an independent consultant on issues of HIV, gender, women. I studied anthropology since I left the school, and I never imagined that I was going to link those issues with HIV and AIDS.
So would you like to tell us about the circumstances of your diagnosis?
When I was beginning to do my final research after my studies in anthropology, I was planning to do it in a rural area in Bolivia. And I came back very sick, and I thought I had yellow fever or something. My sister advised me to go for a test and test for everything. But basically, she told my uncle to also test me for HIV, but she didn't ask me. And I didn't know I was being tested for HIV, so the next day, she knew before me that I was HIV positive. And when they told me, I was really not expecting the news. I was not ready for that, because I didn't receive pre- and post-counseling. I had to repeat the HIV testing and all the process in order to believe that I was actually HIV positive, because I thought someone was playing a joke to me.
So that must have been a very stressful experience for you.
Well, I really thought I had simple tropical diseases that would go away in the altitude of La Paz, my city, which is very high. And then I came to learn that I was HIV positive, and I didn't know anything about HIV. I really thought I will die very soon, because nobody prepared me for that. And I understand the reasons why my sister did that. It is because she knew I was a rape survivor in 1998, and she always thought that I had to check on anything related to sexually transmitted infections after the rape. But when the rape happened, I didn't want to go for any checks or support, because I was really traumatized after the rape, so I just wanted to forget. She always thought that I needed to have some care, professional care, in terms of medical care and psychological support.
So how did you find, in general, how did you find the reactions or the attitudes of the health staff?
The person who gave me my HIV test, he was not really an expert on HIV testing. So when he told me, "You don't have yellow fever, but you have HIV," well, he said AIDS, actually. He told me, well, he just assumed that I was a young lady that was part of a gang. And he went ahead and asked me if I was in any gang of young people and if I had sex with all of them as a initiation passage for the gang. He really assumed that I was a very promiscuous person. And he gave me all the medical terms. I didn't understand anything of what he was saying. I noticed even my uncle, he was very afraid of coming closer. But right after that, they directed me to a doctor in the same laboratory who was known to be working with HIV-positive people, and he explained better. But I still did not believe I was living with HIV, so I did again all the tests after 3 months.
What kind of reactions did you have? What thoughts did you have about life?
When I repeated the test, I received more information, and really the pre-counseling and the post-counseling was very important for me, because I understood that maybe I was not going to die very soon, but I still couldn't understand the news very well, because I was 23 at that time and I was just finishing my studies, and I didn't realize never how I got infected, what was my risk behavior, because all the messaging that I received when I was younger is that gay men and sex workers and drug users, those are the ones who will be infected. So I was with a boyfriend 9 years, and well, I also experienced rape in the hands of these two men on the street, but I was not a promiscuous woman. I didn't realize how this happened to me, I talked to my boyfriend, and he didn't want to go for a test. He said he didn't want to know. And until the end, he didn't take the test. And in 2003, he died. So I don't know if he died of HIV or something else. I really didn't think I was going to be this age. In 2007, I had my 30th birthday, and I made a big dinner in Bolivia with all my friends there, because I said, this is half of a life in Bolivia. The life expectancy is 60 or something in Bolivia. So I said, when I made it, which I thought was not going to be possible when they gave me those tests.
When did you decide to start going public about your status?
As soon as I was tested in 2000, I wanted to meet other people with HIV. My doctor told me that if I needed medications, maybe my parents could buy those medications and pay $500 each month, which my father and mother did. But I couldn't just stand that, because Bolivia is a poor country, so that was a lot of money. And then I decided not to take the medications anymore if they were going to be that cost. And I insisted in meeting other people, and I met some leaders, mostly gay men. And we had a summit of leaders from Bolivia. It was 11 persons in that summit, and I think we were only two women there. And I really felt very far from them, because all of them were gay, and I was thinking, this is not my place. But the need for a network of people with HIV in Bolivia was so clear, because at that time there was no treatment, and people were dying very often. I think we knew about people who were dying every week. So we decided to begin the Bolivian network of people living with HIV. And in that time, we decided to sign a petition to the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, asking the Bolivian government to give us medication so that we wouldn't die. And the commission supported our petition, but the Bolivian government only delivered medications in 2004, 2 years after our petition. And 27 of the 52 original people who signed the petition were already dead. I became an activist because I think it was a survival strategy for us. The voices of women were so absent. I never planned to be an activist. It was what we had to do in order to secure our treatment.
So tell us particularly about the voices of women.
Well, because of my experience as a rape survivor, I made some connections. I didn't have a lot of information on women, because some of the information, the little available in Bolivia, was speaking in very general terms and speaking mostly of gay men. So I was thinking of my own story, and I tried to analyze how things went on my life. And I made a connection between gender-based violence, gender inequality, and the fact that I was HIV positive. And I decided to speak then also about my experience as a rape survivor, because I noticed that many women in Bolivia and around the world are living with the same experiences. Some people are more shocked when they listen that part of my story than the fact that I am living with HIV. But I decided to disclose on that every time I speak, because someone has to break the silence on the violence against women. Bolivia and Latin America generally is a country with a very machist culture, in which men power is really on the norms in culture and the behaviors of generations. And it's very difficult to change the perceptions, the actions, and the thoughts of women and men. And these gender norms put women at risk, at greater risk of HIV, but also men, because they think they are so powerful that not even HIV will affect them. The level of violence against women and girls, for me, is just a symptom of how much also men need to change.
Would you like to talk a bit about the role of motherhood in relation to all of these issues?
Well, I think with HIV I became a very well-known person in the world, and that is not necessarily very beautiful for me, because people know me because of my HIV status, because I speak on that. They don't know all the other things that I have as a human being and as a woman. And I don't know if they would listen to me if I were HIV negative, for example. And there are many women in the world who have something to say, but they don't have the chances to speak. So HIV gave me many opportunities, and I grew up as a human being with HIV somehow. But the part that I resent from HIV is the fact that I feel it took away my freedom to be a mother like other women. I know I can still have a baby and a family and decide on that, but the fears and the desires that I have, both of them are so big, and they are in conflict in my inner being. And on the one hand, I want to have a baby so much, but on the other hand, I worry so much about transmission to the baby, about not being able to take care of that baby when he grows up, about the discrimination that he would face because I am a public speaker on HIV, and I worry about the development of the baby, being a healthy baby, and of course I also worry about the reaction of the social networks that surround me. No woman living with HIV or not lives in an island. She is connected to people around, and in my case, my social network is the Evangelical Church in Bolivia, and my father is one of the very well-known pastors. So whatever I do, because I am his daughter, I expose also his leadership. And this is also a very difficult part for me, because in the evangelical teachings and practices, I can only have a baby if I am married to a Christian man. And I don't think that will happen, because the Christian models that Christian men expect as wives, it's not myself, of course. They expect women who will get married as virgins, who didn't have sexual experiences before marriage, and I am already not that anymore. So this is a very conflictive area for me, but I discovered that in the middle of everything, God can operate his love and grace, even with experiences like mine that are not so like the role model for the evangelical church.
And it sounds like you have a very supportive family and parents, Violetta.
My first very difficult experience of disclosing my status was telling my father and mother that I am HIV positive. I don't think any parent expect a young daughter or young son to be giving this news. So for me, I didn't want to tell them, but I noticed that if I died soon, maybe they needed to know what happened. And when I disclosed to them, I didn't have the courage to tell them face to face. I wrote a letter to them and I said no more lies. I told them everything. I told them about the rape and the fact that I was already sexually active, which they didn't know, or I was trying to hide very well. And really, I was expecting them to come to me with the questions and saying, well, you have been doing everything we told you not to do in the house and in the church. And they came to me very full of love. My father told me, we don't want to know how this happened. We don't want the details unless you want to tell us. We just want you to know that you are our daughter and we will love you 2 days, 3 months, whatever you are alive, we will be with you, and this is everything we have to say. When they told me that, I decided to leave, because if they were going to question me and maybe have a judging approach to my situation. I don't think I was going to decide to leave. I was going to maybe commit suicide. I think I didn't really know my parents. I thought they were going to judge me. And this is where I like to use my first name also, Gracia, which in Spanish means grace. And they gave me this name because of the grace of God. But the concept of the grace of God is very nice in theory. It's what God gives us, what we don't deserve, and the fact that He doesn't give us what we deserve. But it's very difficult to realize how this is in practice. And when they came to me full of love in that moment, I realized that grace in practice.
So, Violeta, going back to motherhood, can you tell us a bit about the role of motherhood for women in Bolivia?
Because this is a very strong desire in my heart until date. I decided to do my research for my master course on motherhood and HIV among women living with HIV in Bolivia. But I cannot separate myself from the subject, like in a very academical approach, because for me it's something that really moves my feelings. I discovered in the stories of women living with HIV in Bolivia that motherhood sometimes is like a symbolic cleansing of the stigma of being HIV positive. It is better in a context like Bolivia and Latin America to be HIV positive but also have family kids, because to be single and not married and HIV positive will absolutely bring the questions about the kind of behavior that woman had, and of course the stigma of being a woman who was sexually active and who was very easy for sex and all that stuff, which in Bolivia is very strong. I also discovered that some women specifically want to have daughters, and this is because they want to live in their daughters, and the HIV and AIDS situation brought the reality of death, so they want to continue their lives in a daughter. For myself, when I read the stories of the women, I saw myself in a mirror and I tried to question myself how much of my motivations of wanting so much to have a baby were maybe selfish, because I was feeling alone, because I wanted to clean the stigma, or because I wanted to symbolically overcome death, or how much of my motivation was coming from a real desire to have a family and a baby that I could love. I think it's a combination of all of these motivations. I have the courage to talk in international gatherings on my experience, but I still don't find the courage to become a mother alone. And then my older sister, she has two nieces, and then I discovered that I am somehow a mother for them also. So I was thinking maybe motherhood is more than being pregnant, because with them I discovered some feelings and attitudes that are really being a mother, but I never got pregnant. So motherhood is more than the physiological fact of being pregnant.
And what do you find is the general attitude of the health services to women in Bolivia who are positive, who want to have children?
Generally, HIV positive women are told not to get pregnant. In all the messaging given by the health sector and even the persons with HIV and the families of the women, the message is please don't get pregnant. We somehow don't want you to reproduce. And I understand how many women feel, because all their lives they have been growing with a message that says you will become a real woman when you have children, because that's the gender rule in Bolivia and in the majority of cultures. And suddenly when they are HIV positive, they are told don't do that. So for some of them it becomes an existential conflict and really undermines their identity as women. so they cannot make themselves legitimate women among society because they cannot have children. And then I understand why the motivations are very, very strong for these women.
What are your feelings about public health policies which are promoting antenatal testing of women when they're pregnant?
I think the pregnancy is a very vulnerable moment. I saw my two sisters, and really anything can happen to you in that moment, and your ability to decide is not the same as when you are not pregnant, I think, because I saw it's a moment of vulnerability. And I don't agree with any policies that only target women because of the children and then don't take care of the women, because I have seen many children who don't have their mothers anymore, and really children need their mothers alive and healthy for them. Testing during the pregnancy, I think it depends on which moment. When women are planning to get pregnant, maybe it's the best time to offer a test and to explain everything, but right in the beginning, the reality with the majority of women who are tested is that they are tested just the moment that they will deliver, and that's a very particular moment, and they cannot decide with all their senses in that moment. During the antenatal care in Bolivia, we had a program offering the information, not the test, to pregnant women, but we didn't offer this using the health workers. We were working with the women with HIV, so while the women were waiting for their care services and just making the queue, we took the women with HIV and talked to them, from women to women, saying, telling their experiences living with HIV and how they thought, as HIV positive women, they could benefit from a test, and as well as the child. The women really understood, and they took the message that was not like mandatory, and they really took it as the advice of a friend. The health sector is really mandatory directive in its practices, and I think that's what scares women.
And in Bolivia, if women test positive during pregnancy, is there a problem for them with attitudes from health staff or attitudes from partners?
I think the great problem is to have the C-section. We had in Bolivia cases in which women have been denied care, and some maternity centers said we will not perform the C-section when the women disclose their status, because they said they don't have the training and all the staff that is needed to properly take care of an HIV positive woman. We know it's not true. We know it's based on stigma and discrimination. A health sector staff and health workers are very afraid of performing C-sections to women with HIV or even regular gynecological service. They don't want to make the surgeries for women who have cervical cancer, for example. So the women are not disclosing their status because they are being denied care. Health sector in Bolivia has many problems because this is a poor country who is very used to discriminate in terms of access to health. And then women with HIV are just one of the least in which they consider they don't have to do things as best as possible. Bolivia's health system has many deficiencies, and HIV is not a priority in Bolivia.
What about criminalization of transmission?
I think in Latin America the epidemic seems to be, at the moment, still so much based in the affected communities, like they say, gay men, etc., which is true. But the epidemic among women is not yet very well known, so we don't know about cases of women who have been criminalized because of transmitting HIV to their children. But I know the ideology and the feeling to do that is there. because in Chile, for example, women with HIV have been sterilized against their consent and without their consent. So they took the government to a human rights court because they did it in mass. And this happened in Chile. Chile is not a poor country like Bolivia. And this happened in very recent years. And it's not only Africa, but the rest of the world suffering from the same attitudes. And the messaging, so strong, disencouraging women to get pregnant, for me is saying that there is a door open for criminalizing women with HIV who may transmit the virus to their children because of inadequate care or denial to access to the services. That's why when somebody asked me to participate in an anti-stigma campaign for the International AIDS Conference in Mexico, I accepted to put my face on the campaign, but with a text that would speak specifically about criminalization. And my text says, I am HIV positive, I could go to jail if my baby is infected. Also, we have to look better at the laws in each country, because if you analyze them, you know, my husband or my partner, he could take me to jail because my baby is transmitted. He could make a case in the police or whatever. So all the rights of an HIV-positive woman for motherhood are really undermined in situations like Bolivia. The culture doesn't help, medical sector doesn't help, and also we don't have the protection in the laws.
Final words.
Just to say that I am actually trying to get pregnant in a very active way, and I have been saying this message to people around. For example, in the AIDS conference in Mexico, do you know that I'm trying to get pregnant? And people look at me and they just don't have any words to say because they welcome my story of being HIV positive and being in the UNAIDS board and this and that very well. But they don't want to know about the fact that I may be trying to get pregnant. They want me to say I would have an artificial insemination. That's what they would like to hear. And, you know, I don't want to do that. I want to have a baby in the cheapest way possible and the most enjoyable possible. And that is something very difficult for these people who work on HIV to understand, because I am a public speaker on HIV. It's not only about my desires, it's also a political statement for me to get pregnant being a public speaker on HIV. I hope in the next conference I will be delivering any plenary with my baby on my womb. Really, I expect that.